In about half of states in this country, employers used to be able to fire people for being gay or transgender. That changed Monday. The highest court in the U.S. has ruled that a law banning discrimination based on sex includes people who are in the LGBTQ plus communities. We're talking about what that means for public policy. It's The Morning Show. I'm Keeley Boltina in for Kate Archer-Kent, and we're taking your calls at 800-642-1234. What is your response to the Supreme Court's ruling? What broader implications do you anticipate the opinion having? Are you LGBT? What's it like for you to navigate this time? 800-642-1234. You can also email ideas@WPR.org. Our guest is Isaac West. He's an associate professor of communication at Vanderbilt University and the author of Transforming Citizenships, Transgender Articulations of the Law. Isaac, welcome to the Ideas Network.
Yeah, thank you for the invitation to talk about this important case today.
This decision makes employment discrimination due to a person's sexual orientation or gender identity illegal. What does that mean for people who face discrimination at work for those reasons?
I think this decision is significant for a couple different reasons. The first thing is that it's the first explicit victory for trans folk in the Supreme Court. And somewhat surprisingly, Gorsuch addressed trans issues in an affirming manner. And here, you know, we kind of have to wonder how much his colleagues and the clerks influenced the tone of his decision, not so much because of him, but just because of past court decisions that have often not been respectful in that way. And although the dissenters in this case lamented the majority's refusal to define the term sexual orientation and gender identity, I think the flexibility provided by the lack of the definition is an unusual but also a pretty welcome development. And so I think that of the things that will come of this case, it will hopefully help to deter future acts of discrimination as people learn more about this case and its implications.
So how is this ruling different from how the law used to help us understand sex discrimination?
Well, as you stated in the intro, you know, a lot of people were unaware that it was legal and, in fact, you know, sanctioned that it was OK to fire people because they were gay, identified as trans, and for other categories. So I think one of the important outcomes of this is it really does make a strong statement to employers and to the public who might not have been aware of the lack of employment protections. My students often didn't know about it. When I've given other public talks, people are often surprised. And so hopefully it will start to rectify the uneven distribution of precarity and vulnerability that are directed at trans and queer folk, especially trans and queer folk of color, who experience the highest rates of employment discrimination. And so the way that this decision ultimately says that, you know, it is no longer okay to fire people or to not hire them or to promote them because of their sexual orientation or because of their gender identity is a pretty significant shift from before.
We're talking with Isaac West, who studies legal rhetoric and how gender and sexuality relate to our understanding of citizenship. And he's with us to discuss the legal implications of Monday's Supreme Court ruling on sex discrimination. And we are taking your calls, your questions, your responses at 800-642-1234. You can email us at ideas@WPR.org or give us a call, 800-642-1234. Isaac, how might we see this particular ruling extend to other areas beyond employment, or even will we?
Yeah, that is very much an open question. You know, one thing, it's the decisions are very easy to read, relatively speaking, for a Supreme Court decision. And so I really urge people to read them. They're written to be read by a lay public who may not understand all the ins and outs of, you know, arcane bits of law. Now, the dissents really belabor the floodgates that might have been opened by the decision. And there may be some cascading effects as it relates, for example, to the really odious anti-trans bathroom laws. I think courts will be pretty hard-pressed to find evidence to substantiate the unfounded fears underwriting these laws, especially given the way that the decision takes up the question of sex and how we might define it. And Gorsuch, I mean, he punted on these issues in that particular decision because they were not before the court, and that was the right thing to do. But I would imagine that insurance companies are going to have to rethink their policies regarding trans medical care. I'm not sure how they can justify excluding it from their coverage after the decision. The one thing that people seem concerned about relative to this decision is whether or not it will affect religious organizations of different kinds. And I have to imagine that this court in particular would go out of its way to create carve-outs for religious organizations. I don't know so much about corporations, but I do think they'll protect churches, for example.
Interesting. Yeah, because some employers, they bring their religious beliefs to their work. Do we know if businesses are able to disregard this ruling based on religious freedom laws?
Well, we're going to get an answer to that maybe even today. Who knows? Because the Sisters of the Poor case and so on, because they're about to rule on some religious freedom cases. And so, you know, there's been some kind of reading of the tea leaves relative to the Bostock decision here that we're talking about to the other cases that deal with religious freedom and whether or not Alito's pretty fiery dissent may, you know, that it's definitely about the case that we're talking about today, but it could also maybe be about some other things. So I'm not sure exactly how they'll parse those different parts out, but it seems like they're going to have to find a way to do that.
We've got a comment, Jack from Caledonia called 800-642-1234. Jack thinks no one should be fired for anything other than work performance, but also doesn't think the Supreme Court needed to make such a drastic new designation of what sex or gender are, thinks that they went too far. We saw this actually in the opinions, right? The justices are arguing about how we define sex when it comes to discrimination.
Yeah, I mean, that is definitely in the dissents, you know, they think that they took sex too far. But as Gorsuch points out, I mean, it, you know, as often with these Supreme Court decisions, it's like two ships passing in the night, where the dissents really focused on the kind of the importance of sexuality and gender identity relative to you know, these particular claims. What Gorsuch and the majority do is they say, but all of these acts, right, ultimately come back to you are either, you know, you're not promoting or you're firing someone because of their sex, you know. And so I think it's, as Gorsuch points out, it's not so much an expansion of the idea of sex, but he's like, but if you just take, you know, this but-for test that is used by the court, you know, but for the fact that this person's gender identity is something you don't agree with, but for the fact that this person's, you know, sexual orientation is something that you don't agree with, you would or would not have hired them. And so I don't think it's so much of an expansion of the idea of what sex is, as opposed to just saying that the act of discrimination is based in a sense of sex.
We're talking with Associate Professor Isaac West, who's walking us through what the implications are at this point, as far as we know, when it comes to Monday's Supreme Court ruling about discrimination on the basis of sex. And we're taking your calls at 800-642-1234. What is your response to that ruling protecting lesbian, bisexual, gay, and transgender people from workplace discrimination? How do you think it will change things? Do you think it will change things? And what do you wonder about the broader implications of the decision from the High Court? Give us a call now. Still time for you at 800-642-1234. You can also send us an email to ideas@WPR.org. I'm Keely Boltina. We're having this conversation on The Morning Show, and this is the Ideas Network. It's The Morning Show on the Ideas Network. I'm Keely Boltina. We're talking about the ruling from the United States Supreme Court that says employers can't discriminate against people based on their sexual orientation or gender identity. Our guest is Isaac West, who studies legal rhetoric and how gender and sexuality relate to our understanding of our citizenship. And we're taking your calls at 800-642-1234. Are you an employer or a manager? What actions are you taking to ensure you're complying with Monday's ruling? Are you LGBT? What's it like for you to navigate the system right now? Have you experienced workplace discrimination because you're lesbian, bisexual, gay, or transgender? Share your story with us at 800-642-1234. Again, we are talking with our guest, who is Isaac West, a professor of communication and gender studies at Vanderbilt University. You mentioned, we've been talking kind of about this idea of firing people. I think that's where we often think of workplace discrimination. But you also mentioned the idea that someone may not be promoted because of this. So how does employment discrimination actually play out?
In any number of ways. And often, you know, the real sad thing here is that it's extremely difficult to prevail in an employment discrimination suit for any number of reasons, right? Because people might have signed arbitration clauses, the costs of litigation, you know, how many people have $10,000 sitting around for a retainer, for an attorney, for example, or what, you know, whatever it might be. It's often difficult to prove the intent or effects, you know, and so there's lots of different ways that discrimination is experienced. And then it's even more difficult to then be able to kind of leverage that evidence or that experience into something that, you know, can then be litigated. And so, you know, it can be all the way from, you know, the vetting process through, you know, a promotion process through a termination process. There's lots of different ways that discrimination can be experienced. And as I said before, you know, the people that are hit hardest by this are the people who are, you know, typically exposed to vulnerability and precarity, you know, throughout society. So in this case, you know, thinking here about how trans folk of color, for example, are really, you know, find it difficult often to find stable employment, you know, and so there are some long-term effects relative to that.
What does this mean in practice, though? I mean, especially in right-to-work states, people can be fired, let go for no reason at all. How can you resolve that in any way with whether you've been fired because of your gender identity or your sexual orientation?
Yeah, and so the decision takes this up in different ways, and there's some kind of crosstalk that happens in the opinions there, but of course, you know, it's almost never the case, right, that you are discriminated against because of just one factor. And so the question has to become, you know, at least according to this case, it's saying that as long as it's a contributing factor, so in other words, that an employer, right, or a set of employees working for a particular company, right, have practiced a discriminatory behavior, right, in this case, the violation of the protection of sex discrimination, that someone can start to bring suit. And so, you know, the hope here is that the explicit protections provided by the Supreme Court decision will deter employers and employees from discriminating. But it is often difficult to kind of parse out, right, these intersectional claims. So whether it's someone's race, their gender, and so on, that are, you know, kind of animating a particular act of discrimination. But nonetheless, if you can prove that at least some of the animus here, right, is because of a perception of your sex. Again, I think it's important to go back to that, the previous question. It's not so much, right, that what is your sex, but it's how people are treating you based upon their perception of your sex or sexuality.
We're talking with Isaac West, who studies legal rhetoric and how gender and sexuality relate to our understanding of citizenship. And there's time for your call at 800-642-1234. What is your response to the Supreme Court's Monday ruling protecting LGBTQ plus people from workplace discrimination? 800-642-1234. Isaac, what civil rights protections had transgender Americans had before this ruling came out?
Few, and even fewer under the Trump administration, who rescinded a bunch of the executive orders, for example, or administrative agency decisions that had helped expand protections for trans folk. before this ruling, you know, most of the protections would have been at like a city level or a state level, such as a local human rights ordinance or maybe a statewide civil rights law, you know, might have protected trans folk. But again, as you know, I kind of said at the beginning, one of the great things about this is really the first explicit declaration by the Supreme Court that trans folks are, you know, entitled to civil rights protection. And so, you know, hopefully they will continue to expand the purview of civil rights protection across a whole host of other things, including housing, medical care, and so on.
You mentioned the Trump administration. This administration has barred most transgender people from serving in the military. What does this ruling mean for government, which is a large employer?
Yes. So the in brief, the military is excluded from Title VII. So that's a whole that's like its whole other kind of thing. But in terms of the government, yeah, I mean, oftentimes, sorry, I'm just trying to think of the quickest way to answer this, but
I understand.
I think that the agency determinations will matter immensely here, like how they will kind of implement this in the government will be an interesting, I think that will be an interesting development, just given the overall kind of unwillingness to follow some parts of the law. So we'll see how and why this is either followed or not, especially with like within federal government agencies.
Sure, because last week we saw the Federal Department of Health Services remove protections against discrimination for transgender patients in healthcare.
Right.
Does this ruling on sex discrimination have implications for the healthcare sector?
I would think so. I mean, you know, as you know, Gorsuch says, like, you know, this case is just about this case. And I get his point, right, which is to say you're only ruling on the thing that's before you. But I mean, the reason why a Supreme Court takes up a case is to clarify, you know, kind of murky areas of the law. And given the way that, you know, they kind of grant a particular standing and an idea about sex, and its importance to not allow animus motivated by sex, one would think that clearly this will give some traction to those who, you know, want to make arguments that, for example, insurance should cover, right, like trans medical care. And it just would seem hard to get beyond that, it seems.
Well, is that true then for things like education or housing discrimination, too?
Again, you would, it just seems so difficult to imagine a way to parse out that sex discrimination is bad in employment discrimination, but it's different in housing and it's different in education, right? And, you know, Alito, I believe, is the one that, you know, goes through and points out all these different places like Title IX, the Fair Housing Act, these different places that use because of sex, and they borrowed the language from Title VII. And so if it's language that's borrowed from this particular statute, one would have to imagine that they're going to understand it similarly across different modes of the law.
We have a quick question from Cindy from Madison as we kind of wrap up our conversation. Cindy says they told their employer about their bisexuality and now the workplace is hostile. Where does Cindy start?
Either through the state agency, and I'm sorry, I didn't look it up beforehand. I should have, but the equal opportunity, you know, employment opportunity, state agency or, federal. I mean, there's lots of different ways to go about it. I would encourage Cindy to look for, to look online, because I think there will definitely be some lawyers who are willing to take up some of these cases now, and maybe, you know, at reduced or, you know, pro bono rates, I think, to kind of enforce these laws. So I would definitely kind of search out your opportunities. But Probably starting with like a local or a state, you know, kind of equal employment opportunity office would be the place to go.
All right, Cindy, we hope that helps. And Isaac, thank you for joining us today.
Yeah, thank you.
Isaac West is an associate professor of communication at Vanderbilt University. Isaac's the author of Transforming Citizenships, Transgender Articulations of the Law. Up next is news. Then we have a conversation around police reform that includes the work of police unions. We're hearing from a Wisconsin Police Union representative and from you. This is the Ideas Network. I'm Keeley Boltina, and you're listening to The Morning Show.